In 1982, Joanne Tate was murdered in front of her two young children. One of them was 7-year-old, M.D., as she was identified in court papers. What did this 7-year-old see? In her immediate reports to police, she identified the attacker as Bill. But when a suspect failed to emerge in the months following the investigation, police got more aggressive. M.D. was told that a man named Rodney Lincoln had been named as the prime suspect in the murder. Under pressure, M.D. changed her story, and along with a single hair from the crime scene, Rodney Lincoln was placed at the scene of the crime, and he was sentenced to a life in prison. But 30 years later, it was a television program about her mother's murder that jogged M.D.'s memory again. She realized that her memory of events was inaccurate. Rodney Lincoln was not the man who killed her mother, she believed, and attacked her and her sister. A retesting of DNA evidence suggested the initial results were false. The hair identified was not Lincoln's. It's our latest case in point from commentary editor Andrew Cohen at the Marshall Project, who's author of the Case in Point series. Kay Lincoln, daughter of Rodney Lincoln, joined him to tell us how a 7-year-old's one false memory could beat a family's certainty that Rodney was not guilty. We should warn you, some of the descriptions of sexual assault in this segment are disturbing.
In the beginning, it was just absolute shock that he was arrested to begin with. But there was not one single member of our family who ever believed that he could be guilty of this crime. Everyone knew that it was a mistake. I was 13 years old when he was arrested, and I just really thought that they would figure it all out and he would come home. When that didn't happen, I eventually resigned myself that my dad was going to spend the rest of his life in prison for something he didn't do. But I really believed that they were just good people doing their job, and they made a mistake.
And so when suddenly the witness begins to recant as a result of watching a television program, those unshakable views get whacked, and then the system gets tested in a really different way. First of all, listen to MD, the witness that you described, who was a young girl at the time of the crime, realizing that she'd made a mistake.
I remember, like, watching it, and I started to see a series of mugshots. And at first, I thought that's one ugly b****, and then this one popped up. And immediately, I felt like I had to hide. It looked like he looked really dirty. The picture itself was darker than the other ones. They were like lighter. So I don't know if it was the background or the lighting, but it was darker. And I felt scared. I felt like I had to hide. And I couldn't describe to myself why.
What's going on with that witness there, Andrew Cohen?
Well, listen, when the crime occurred, MD was not at all certain of who had committed it. She was very shaky in her testimony. Even after she identified Rodney Lincoln, she was very, very shaky. So 30-some years ago, you have prosecutors and the police shoring up this young girl's credibility, and now you have prosecutors and the police tearing it down. What the prosecutors say now is, oh no, she was right back in 1983, she's wrong now, now she suffers from PTSD. I mean, they're destroying the credibility of the person upon which they had built their entire case, and that juxtaposition to me makes this an unusual case. So far, the Missouri courts aren't buying it. So far, when the DNA came back that broke the link, the physical link to Rodney Lincoln and the crime scene, the Missouri court said it's not enough because of the testimony of MD. And now the testimony of MD is gone, and the Missouri courts are basically saying, well, we still can't proclaim him innocent. We still can't really give him any relief. I think eventually there's a decent chance that's going to change, but it shouldn't be taking as long as it has.
And listen now to more of that recantation. And the irony here is that in memory, there is such a mix of very strong, powerful memories and the kinds of things like identity that are important to police, but maybe aren't important to a victim. Here you can feel the things that she remembers and realize that they don't necessarily help you identify who it is that committed the crime. Here's MD once again.
It's worse in my memory now than it was even a few months ago, because I feel that disgusting beard up against my face. I remember him trying to put himself inside me. I remember his body. I remember blood being on his body. I remember seeing him at that sink, washing that knife off that blood, you know, the blood off the knife. And he has bushy hair. And I remember laying under my sister's bed watching this man smoke cigarettes. And I don't understand how Rodney got to be there. And I'm not going to say it was a concerted effort or anything bad. I think it was a comedy of errors. But I want to know why Rodney was there in the first place, because he wasn't in my house at night. He was not there. He was never there.
Kay Lincoln, you can feel for this victim and her powerful memories, but they don't in any way implicate your father.
No. In listening to her give that recantation, I'm sitting here with tears in my eyes. It's heartbreaking that not only did they sentence my dad to a life in prison, they sentenced a 7-year-old girl to a life of misery, because her entire life was built around a lie. And she suffered tremendously growing up and through her adult years because she had that guilt and that doubt nagging at her, but she didn't know what it was. Now, armed with the information I have now, this was not a mistake made by people who were just doing a good job. These were people who purposely set out to convict a man who they knew was innocent. They were supposed to give justice to those two little girls and to their mother. And instead, they victimized them all over again.
What are the incentives for the system not to say, in the face of this evidence, we made a mistake?
Yeah, for prosecutors now to be attacking her, it goes against basically every creed the prosecutors have, which is to try to be deferential and compassionate toward the victim of crime. In other words, they're so invested in a conviction that really is very shaky at this point that they're actually attacking the key witness in a way that you rarely see. That's, I think, the problem going forward in cases like this is, how could a new generation of prosecutors not be willing to look at what the evidence seems to lead to rather than defending old convictions?
Andrew Cohen is commentary editor at the Marshall Project and author of Case in Point. Kay Lincoln is the daughter of Rodney Lincoln at the center of this particular case. Kay Lincoln, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And Andrew, it's always great to talk to you.
My pleasure.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.